There's more of my mother in me than I thought. Maybe we don't have to be scholar slave and mask. I drop the dagger. For tonight, maybe we can just be Lyre and Elias. Emboldened, I reach out and pull at the edge of his mask, which has never seemed like a part of him. It resists, but now I want it off. I want to see the face of the boy I've been speaking to all night, not the mask I always thought he was. So I pull harder, and the mask falls into my hands with a hiss. The back is bent into sharp spikes wet with blood. The tattoo on his neck glistens with a dozen small wounds. "I'm so sorry," I say. "I didn't realize." He looks into my eyes, and something undefined burns in his gaze, a flash of emotion that brings a different sort of fire to my skin. "I'm glad you took it off." I should look away. I cannot. His eyes are nothing like his mother's. Hers are the brittle grey of broken glass, but Elias's, with their ring of dark lashes, are a deeper hue, like the thick heart of a storm cloud. They draw me in, mesmerize me, refuse to release me. I lift tentative fingers to his skin. The stubble of his cheek is rough beneath my palm. Keenan's face flashes through my mind and fades as quickly. He is far away, distant, dedicated utterly to the resistance. Elias is here, before me, warm and beautiful, and broken. He's a marshal, a mask. But not here. Not tonight in this room. Here, now, he is just Elias, and I am just Lyre. And we are, both of us, drowning. Lyre. There is a plea in his voice, in his eyes. What does it mean? Does he want me to back away? Does he want me to come closer? I lift myself up on my toes, and his face comes down at the same time. His lips are soft, softer than I could have imagined. But there is a hard desperation behind them, a need. The kiss speaks. It begs. Let me forget, forget, forget. His cloak falls away from me, and my body is against his. He pulls me to his chest, his hands running down my back, clasping my thigh, drawing me closer, closer. I arch into him, reveling in his strength, his fire, the alchemy between us twisting and burning and melding until it feels like gold. Then he breaks away, his hands held out before him. "I'm sorry," he says. "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. I'm a mask and you're a slave, and I shouldn't have." "It's all right." My lips burn. "I'm the one who started it." We stare at each other, and he looks so confused, so angry at himself that I smile, sadness and embarrassment and desire coursing through me. He picks his cloak up from the floor and holds it out to me, averting his eyes. "Will you sit?" I ask tentatively, covering myself once more. "Tomorrow I'll be a slave, and you'll be a mask. And we can hate each other like we're supposed to. But for now." He eases down next to me, keeping a careful distance between us. That alchemy lures, beckons, burns. But his jaw is clenched, and his hands are fisted together like each is a lifeline for the other. Reluctantly, I put a few more inches between us. "Tell me more," I say. "What was it like as a fiver? Were you happy to leave Blackcliff? He relaxes a little, and I coax the memories from him like Pop used to, with frightened patience. The night passes, filled with his stories of Blackcliff and the tribes, and my tales of Patience and the Quarter. We do not speak again of the raid or the trials. We do not speak of the kiss or the sparks still dancing between us. Before I know it, the sky begins to lighten. Dawn, he says.
Time to start hating each other again.
He puts on his mask, his face going still as it digs into him, and then pulls me to my feet. I stare at our hands, at my slim fingers entwined in his larger ones, at the veined muscles of his forearm, the slight bones of my wrist, the warmth of our skin meeting. It seems somehow significant, my hand in his. I look up into his face, surprised at how near he is to me, at the fire in his gaze, the life, and my pulse quickens. But then he drops my hand and steps away. I offer him back his cloak, along with the dagger, but he shakes his head.
Keep them. You still have to walk back through the school and...
His eyes drop to my ripped dress, my bare skin, and he jerks them up again.
Keep the knife, too. A scholar girl should always carry a weapon, no matter what the rules say.
He pulls a leather strap from his bureau.
Thigh sheath. It'll keep the blade safe and out of sight.
I regard him anew, at last seeing him for what he is. If you could just be who you are in here, I place my palm over his heart, instead of who they made you, then you would be a great emperor. I feel his pulse thud against my fingers. But they won't let you, will they? They won't let you have compassion or kindness. They won't let you keep your soul.
My soul's gone.
He looks away.
I killed it dead on that battlefield yesterday.
I think of Spiro Tullamon then, of what he said to me the last time I saw him. There are two kinds of guilt, I say softly. The kind that's a burden, and the kind that gives you purpose. Let your guilt be your fuel. Let it remind you of who you want to be. Draw a line in your mind. Never cross it again. You have a soul. It's damaged, but it's there. Don't let them take it from you, Elias. His eyes meet mine when I say his name, and I reach up a hand to touch his mask. It is smooth and warm, like rock polished by water, and then left to heat in the sun. I let my arm fall. Then I leave his room and walk to the doors of the barracks and out into the rising sun.
Chapter 42 Elias. After the barracks door shuts behind Lyra, I still feel the feather-light touch of her fingertips on my face. I see the expression in her eyes as she reached up to me, a careful, curious look that caught my breath. And that kiss. Burning skies, the feel of her, how she'd arched into me, wanted me. A few precious moments of freedom from who I am, what I am. I close my eyes, remembering. But other memories shoved their way in. Darker memories. She'd kept them at bay. For hours she'd fought them off, and she hadn't even known it. But they are here now, and they won't be ignored. I led my men to slaughter. I murdered my friends. I nearly killed Helene. Helene. I have to go to her. I have to make things right with her. Our angers stood too long. Maybe after this nightmare we've wrought, we can find a way forward together. She must be as horrified as I am at what happened, a sickened. I snatch my Sims from the wall. The thought of what I'd done with them makes me want to toss them to the dunes, Telluman blades or not. But I'm too used to having weapons across my back. I feel naked without them. The sun shines as I emerge from the barracks, unfeeling in a cloudless sky. It seems profane somehow, the world clean, the air warm, when scores of young men lay cold in their coffins, waiting to return to the earth. The dawn drums thunder out and begin listing the names of the dead. Each name summons an image in my head, a face, a voice, a form, until it feels as if my fallen comrades are rising up around me, a phalanx of ghosts. Cyril Antonius, Silas Eburian, Tristus Equitus, Demetrius Galerius, Ennis Medulus, Darian Titius, Leander Vison. The drumming goes on. The families will have collected the bodies by now. Blackcliff has no graveyard. Among these walls, all that remains of the fallen is the emptiness of where they walked, the silence where their voices rang. In the bell tower courtyard, cadets lunge and parry with staffs as a centurion circles them. I should have known the commandant wouldn't cancel classes, not even to honor the deaths of dozens of her students. The centurion nods as I pass, and I'm confused by his lack of disgust. Doesn't he know I'm a murderer? Wasn't he watching yesterday? How can you ignore it? I want to shout. How can you pretend it didn't happen? I head for the cliffs. Helene will be down in the dunes, where we have always mourned our dead. On my way there, I see Faris and Dex. Without Tristus, Demetrius, and Leander by their sides, they look bizarre, like an animal missing its legs. I think they will pass me by, or attack me for giving the order that took their souls. Instead, they stop before me, quiet, despondent. Their eyes are as red as mine. Dex massages his neck, his thumb moving in ceaseless circles over the Blackcliff tattoo. I keep seeing their faces, he says, hearing them. For long moments, we stand together in silence. But it is selfish of me to share such grief, to take comfort in knowing that they feel the same self-hatred that I do. I'm the reason they are haunted. You followed orders, I say. This burden, at least, I can take. Orders I gave. Their deaths aren't on you. They're on me. Faris meets my eyes, a ghost of the big, joyful boy he had once been. They're free now, he says. Free of the Augurs, of Blackcliff. Not like us. When Dex and Faris walk away, I rappel to the desert floor, where Helene sits cross-legged in the shade of the cliffs, her feet buried to the ankles in the hot sand. Her hair ripples in the wind, glowing gold-white like the curve of a sunlit dune. I approach her as one would an angry horse. You don't need to be so cat-footed, she says when I'm a few feet away. I'm not armed. I sit beside her. Are you all right? I'm alive. I'm sorry, Helene. I know you can't forgive me, but... Stop. We didn't have a choice, Elias. If I'd gotten the upper hand, I'd have done the same thing to you. I killed Cyril. I killed Silas and Lyris. I nearly killed Dex, but he backed off, and I couldn't find him again. Her silver face could be carved of marble. It's so emotionless. Who is this person? If we'd refused to fight, she says, our friends would have died. What were we supposed to do? I killed Demetrius. I search her face for anger. She and Demetrius grew close after his brother died, She was the only one who ever knew what to say to him. And Leander. You did what you had to. Just as I did what I had to. Just as Faris and Dex and all the others who survived did what they had to. I know they did what they had to do, but they followed an order I gave. An order I should have been strong enough not to give. You'd have died, Elias. She doesn't look at me. She's working so hard to convince herself that it's all right, that what we did was necessary. Your men would have died. The battle will end when you defeat or are defeated by the leader of the enemy. If I'd been willing to die first, Tristus would still be alive. Leander, Demetrius, all of them, Helene. Zack knew it. He begged Marcus to kill him. I should have done the same. You'd be named Empress.
Or the Augurs would name Marcus, and I'd be his slave.
We told our men to kill.
Why doesn't she understand? Why isn't she willing to face it?
We gave the order. We followed it ourselves. It's unforgivable.
What did you think was going to happen?
Helene pushes herself to her feet, and I stand too.
Did you think the trials would get easier? Didn't you know this would come? They've made us live our deepest fears. They've thrown us at the mercy of creatures that shouldn't exist. Then they turned us against each other. Strength of arms and mind and heart. You're surprised.
You're naive, is what you are. You're a fool.
Hell, you don't know what you're saying.
I almost killed you.
Thank the skies for it.
She's in front of me, so close that strands of her long hair blow into my face.
You fought back. After losing so many training battles, I wasn't sure you would. I was so scared. I thought you'd be dead out there.
You're sick. I back away from her. Don't you have any regret? Any remorse?
Those were our friends we killed. They were soldiers,
Helene says.
Empire soldiers who died in battle, who died with honor. I'll celebrate them. I'll mourn them. But I won't regret what I did. I did it for the Empire. I did it for my people.
She paces back and forth.
Don't you see, Elias? The trials are bigger than you or me, bigger than our guilt, our shame. We're the answer to a 500-year-old question. When Tyus's line fails, who will lead the Empire? Who will ride at the head of a 500,000-strong army? Who will control the destinies of 40 million souls? What about our destinies? Our souls? They took our souls a long time ago, Elias.
No, hell! Lyra's words ring in my head. Words I want to believe. Words I need to believe.
You have a soul. Don't let them take it from you.
You're wrong. I can never fix what I did yesterday. But when the fourth trial comes, I won't.
Don't, Elias!
Helene puts her fingers over my mouth, her anger replaced with something like despair.
Don't make vows when you can't know their cost.
I crossed a line yesterday, Helene. I won't cross it again.
Don't say that.
Her hair flies about, and her eyes are wild.
How can you become emperor if that's the way you think? How can you win the trials if...
I don't want to win the trials, I say. I've never wanted to win them. I didn't even want to take them. I was going to desert, Helene, right after graduation, when everyone else would be celebrating. I was going to run. She shakes her head, holding up her hands as if to ward off my words. But I don't stop. She needs to hear this. She needs to know the truth of who I am. I didn't run because Cain told me the only chance I had to be truly free was to take the trials. I want you to win the trials, Hel. I want to be named Bloodshrike. And then I want you to set me free. Set you free. Set you free. This is freedom, Elias. When will you understand that? We're masks. Our destiny is power and death and violence. It's what we are. If you don't own that, then how can you ever be free? She's delusional. I'm trying to comprehend this dreadful truth when I hear the sound of approaching footsteps. Hel hears it too, and we whirl to find Cain rounding a curve in the cliffs. A squadron of 8 legionnaires accompanies him. He says nothing of the fight Helene and I are having, though he must have heard at least part of it. You will come with us. The legionnaires split, 4 taking hold of me, and the other 4 grabbing Helene. What's going on? I try to shake them off, but they're big brutes, bigger than me, and they don't budge. What is this? This, Aspirant Vittorius, is the trial of loyalty.
Chapter 43. Liar. When I enter the Commandant's kitchen, Izzy rushes me. Her eye is shadowed, and her blonde hair is a bird's nest, as if she hasn't slept all night. You're alive! You're here! We thought... Did they harm you, girl? Cook comes up behind Izzy, and I'm shocked to see that she too is disheveled, her eyes red-rimmed. She takes my cloak, and when she sees my dress, she tells Izzy to bring me another. Are you all right? I'm fine. What else can I say? I am still trying to make sense of what has just transpired. At the same time, I'm remembering what Elias said about Bekkar Prison, and one thing becomes clear. I have to get out of here and find the Resistance. I have to figure out where Darin is and what's really going on. Where did they take you, Lyra? Izzy is back with the dress, and I change into it quickly, hiding the dagger at my thigh as best as I can. I'm reluctant to tell them what's happened, but I won't lie to them, not when it's clear that they've spent the entire night fearing for my life. They gave me to Vittorius as a prize for winning the 3rd trial. At the twin looks of horror on their faces, I add in a rush, but he didn't hurt me, nothing happened. Indeed. The Commandant's voice chills my blood, and as one, Izzy, Cook, and I turn to the kitchen door. Nothing happened, you say? She cocks her head. How very interesting. Come with me. I follow her to her study, my feet leaden. Once inside, my eyes dart to the wall of dead fighters. It's like being in a room of ghosts. The Commandant closes the study door and circles me. You spent the night with Aspirant Vittorius, she says. Yes, sir. Did he rape you? So easily, she asks, such an abhorrent question, as if asking my age or my name. No, sir. Why would that be, when the other night he seemed so very interested in you? He couldn't keep his hands off you. She is, I realize, talking about the night of the Moon Festival, as if she can smell my fear. She steps toward me. I don't know. Could it be that the boy actually cares about you? I know he's aided you, the day he carried you up from the dunes, and a few nights ago with Marcus. She takes another step. But the night I found you two in the servants' corridor, that's the night I've been wondering about. What were you doing together? Is he in league with you? Has he turned? I'm not sure what you Did you think you could fool me? Did you think I didn't know? Oh, skies, it can't be. I have spies too, slave. Among the mariners, the tribesmen. Now she's inches away, and her smile is like a thin garrote around my throat. Even in the resistance, you'd be surprised where I have eyes. Those scholar rats know only what I want them to know. What were they up to the last time you met them? Were they planning something significant? Something involving a great many men? Perhaps you're wondering what it was. You'll find out soon enough. Her hand is around my neck before I can think to dodge her. I kick out, and she tightens her grip. The muscles of her arms bulge, but her eyes are as flat and dead as ever. Do you know what I do to spies? I can't breathe. I can't think. I teach them a lesson. Them, and anyone in league with them. Kitchen girl, for instance. No, not Izzy. Not Izzy. Just as spots begin exploding at the edge of my vision, a knock comes at the door. She releases me, letting me fall to the floor in a heap. Casually, as if she hadn't just nearly murdered a slave, she opens the door. Commandant. An auger waits outside. A woman this time, small and ethereal. I expect to see legionnaires behind her like before, but she is alone. I'm here for the girl. You can't have her, the commandant says. She is a criminal, and I'm here for the girl. The auger's face hardens, and she and the commandant lock eyes, a silent and fierce battle of wills. Give her to me and come. We are needed in the amphitheater. She's a spy, and she will be appropriately punished. The auger turns to me, and I can't look away from her. For an instant, I see myself in the dark pool of her eyes, my heart stopped, my face lifeless. As if the knowledge has been planted in my head, I realize that the auger is taking me to the Reaper, that my death is close, closer than during the raid, closer than when Marcus beat me. Don't give me to her, I find myself begging the commandant. Please don't. The auger doesn't let me finish. Do not set your will against the auger's. Keris Veturia. You will fail. You can come willingly to the amphitheater, or I can compel you. Which shall it be? The commandant hesitates, and the auger waits like a rock in a river, patient, unmovable. Finally, the commandant nods and sweeps out the door. For the second time in a day, I'm gagged and bound. Then the auger follows in the commandant's wake, dragging me after.
Chapter 44. Elias. I'll go quietly, I say as the soldiers restrain and blindfold Helene and me. But get your damned hands off me. In response, one of them shoves a gag in my mouth and takes my Sims. The legionnaires haul us up the cliffs and through the school. Footsteps shuffle and thump around me. Centurions shout orders, and I hear, Amphitheater! And Fourth Trial! My whole body tenses. I don't want to go back to the place where I killed my friends. I never want to set foot there again. Cain is a pocket of silence ahead of me. Is he reading me right now? Is he reading Helene? Doesn't matter. I try to forget him, to think as I would if he wasn't here. Loyalty to break the soul. The words are too close to what Lyra said.
You have a soul. Don't let them take it from you.
That, I sense, is exactly what the augurs will try to do. So I draw that line Lyra spoke of, a deep runnel in the earth of my mind. I won't cross it, no matter the cost. I won't. I feel Helene beside me, fear radiating off her, chilling the air around us and setting my nerves on edge.
Elias!
The legionnaires didn't gag her, probably because she had the sense not to be mouthy.
Listen to me. Whatever the augurs ask you to do, you must do it. Understand? Whoever wins this trial is emperor. The augurs said there would be no tie. Be strong, Elias. If you don't win this, everything is lost.
There is an urgency to her that unsettles me, a warning in her words beyond the obvious. I wait for her to say something else, but either she's been gagged or Cain has silenced her. Moments later, hundreds of voices reverberate around me, filling me crown to toe. We've reached the amphitheater. The legionnaires pull me up a set of steps before forcing me to my knees. Helene comes down beside me, and the bindings, blindfolds, and gag come off.
I see they muzzled you, bastard. Pity they didn't make it permanent.
Marcus, kneeling on the other side of Helene, glares at me, hatred spilling from every pore. His body is bunched, a snake ready to strike. He wears no weapon save a dagger at his belt. All his gravitas from the third trial has morphed into a poisonous vitriol. Zack always seemed like the weaker twin, but at least he tried to check the snake. Without his quiet-voiced brother at his back, Marcus seems almost feral. I ignore him and attempt to steel myself for whatever is coming next. The legionnaires have left us on a raised dais behind Cain, who stares fixedly at the amphitheater's entrance, as if awaiting something. A dozen other augurs are arrayed around the dais, tattered shadows who darken the stadium with their very presence. I count them again, 13, including Cain, which means one is missing. The rest of the amphitheater is packed. I spot the governor, the rest of the city councillors. Grandfather sits a few rows behind the commandant's pavilion with a group of his personal guard, his eyes on me.
The commandant's late.
Hel nods to my mother's empty seat.
Wrong, Aquila, Marcus says. She's right on time.
As he speaks, my mother walks through the gates of the amphitheater. The 14th augur follows her, managing, despite her seeming frailty, to pull a bound and gagged girl behind her. I see a mane of heavy black hair come loose, and my heart seizes.
It's Lyra. What's she doing here? Why is she tied up?
The commandant takes her seat while the augur deposits Lyra on the dais beside Cain. The slave girl tries to speak through her gag, but it's knotted too tightly.
Aspirants!
As soon as Cain speaks, the stadium falls silent. A flock of seabirds wheels overhead, screeching. Down in the city, a merchant peddles his wares, the sing-song strains of his voice reaching even here.
The final trial is the trial of loyalty. The Empire has decreed that this slave girl is to die.
Cain gestures to Lyra, and my stomach drops as if I've jumped from a great height.
No, she's innocent. She's done nothing wrong.
Lyra's eyes go wide. She tries to back away on her knees. The same augur who delivered her to the dais kneels behind her and holds her still with an iron grip, like a butcher holding a lamb for slaughter.
When I tell you to proceed,
Cain goes on calmly, as if he's not talking about the death of a 17-year-old girl.
You will all simultaneously attempt to execute her. Whoever carries out the order will be declared victor of the trial.
This is wrong, Cain, I burst out. The Empire has no reason to kill her.
Reason does not matter, Aspirant Veturius. Only loyalty. If you defy the order, you fail the trial. The punishment for failure is death.
I think of the nightmare battlefield, and my blood goes leaden at the memory. Leander, Demetrius, Ennis. They had all been on that field. I'd killed them all. Lyra had been there too, throat cut, eyes dim, hair a sodden cloud around her head.
But I haven't done it yet,
I think desperately.
I haven't killed her.
The Augur looks at each of us in turn, before taking a sim from the Legionnaires, one of mine, and laying it on the dais, equidistant from Marcus, Helene, and me.
Proceed.
My body knows what to do before my mind, and I dive in front of Lyra. If I can place myself between her and the others, she might have a chance. Because I don't care what I saw on that nightmare battlefield. I won't kill her, and I won't let anyone else kill her either. I get to her before Helene or Marcus and spin into a crouch, expecting an attack from one or both of them. But instead of coming for Lyra, Helene leaps for Marcus, knocking her fist against his temple. He drops like a stone, clearly not expecting her attack, and she shoves him off the dais, then kicks my sim toward me.
Do it, Elias, she says, before Marcus comes too.
Then she sees that I'm guarding the girl instead of killing her, and she makes a strange, choked sound. The crowd is silent, holding its breath.
Don't do this, Elias, she says. Not now. We're almost there. You'll be emperor, foretold. Please, Elias, think of what you could do for the Empire.
I told you there's a line I'm not crossing. I feel strangely calm as I say it. Calmer than I felt in weeks. Lyra's eyes shift from Helene to me rapidly.
This is that line. I won't kill her.
Helene picks up the sim.
Then step aside, she says. I'll do it. I'll make it quick.
She moves toward me slowly, her eyes never leaving my face.
Elias, she says, she's going to die no matter what you do. The Empire's decreed it. If you or I don't do it, Marcus will. He'll wake up eventually. We can end this before he does. If she has to die, at least something good will come of it. I'll be Empress. You'll be Bloodshrike.
She takes another step.
I know you don't want rulership, she says softly, or lordship over the Black Guard. I didn't understand before, but I do now. So if you let me take care of this, I vow, by blood and by bone, that the second I'm named Empress, I'll release you from your oaths to the Empire. You can go wherever you want, do whatever you want. You'll be beholden to no one. You'll be free.
I've been watching her body, waiting for her muscles to tense in preparation for the attack. But now my eyes snap to hers.
You'll be free.
The only thing I've ever wanted. And she's handing it to me on a silver platter with a vow I know she'd never break. For a brief, terrible moment, I consider it. I want it more than anything I've wanted in my life. I see myself sailing out of port at Navium, leaving for the Southern Kingdoms, where no one and nothing have a claim over my body or my soul. Well, my body, anyway. Because if I allow Helene to kill Lyra, I won't have a soul.
If you want to kill her, I say to Helene, you'll have to kill me first.
A tear snakes down her face, and for a second, I see through her eyes. She wants this so badly, and it's no enemy keeping it from her. It's me. We are everything to each other, and I'm betraying her again. Then I hear a thud, the unmistakable sound of steel sinking into flesh. Behind me, Lyra pitches forward so suddenly that the auger falls with her, her hands still pinning the girl's limp arms. Lyra's hair is a storm around her, but I can't see her face, her eyes. No, Lyra! I'm down beside her, shaking her, trying to turn her over, but I can't get the damned auger off her, because the woman is shaking in terror, her robes tangled with Lyra's skirts. Lyra is silent, her body limp as a ragdoll's. I spot the hilt of a dagger that's fallen to the dais, the rapidly widening pool of blood spilling out of her. No one can lose that much blood and live. Marcus! Too late, I see him standing at the back of the stage. Too late, I realize that Helene and I should have killed him, that we shouldn't have risked him waking up. The explosion of sound that follows Lyra's death staggers me. Thousands of voices yell at once. Grandfather bellows louder than a gored bull. Marcus jumps onto the dais, and I know he's coming for me. I want him to come. I want to crush the life out of him for what he's done. I feel Kane's hand on my arm, restraining me. Then the gates to the amphitheater burst open. Marcus jerks his head around, shocked into stillness as a foam-coated stallion gallops through the doors of the stadium. The legionnaire riding him slides to the ground, landing on his feet as the beast rears beside him. "The Emperor!" the legionnaire says. "The Emperor is dead! Jen's Tyre has fallen!"
"When?"
the commandant cuts in. There's not an ounce of shock on her face.
"How?"
"A resistance attack, sir. He was killed en route to Serra, only a day from the city. He and all who were with him. Even children."
Waiting vines circle and strangle the oak. The way is made clear just before the end. That was the foretelling the commandant spoke of in her office weeks ago. And now it suddenly makes sense. The vines are the resistance. The oak is the emperor.
"Bear witness, men and women of the empire, students of Blackcliff, aspirants."
Kane releases my arm and his voice booms out, shaking the foundations of the amphitheater and silencing the panic setting in.
"Thus do the augur's visions bear fruit. The emperor is dead, and a new power must rise, lest the empire be destroyed." "Aspirant Veturius," Kane says, "you were given the chance to prove your loyalty. But instead of killing the girl, you defended her. Instead of following my order, you defied it."
"Of course I defied it!"
"This isn't happening.
This wasn't a trial of loyalty for anyone but me. I'm the only one who cared about her. This trial was a joke."
"This trial told us what we needed to know. You are not fit to be emperor. You are stripped of name and rank. You will die tomorrow at dawn by beheading before the Blackcliff Bell Tower. Those who were your peers will bear witness to your shame."
Two augurs fasten chains around my hands and wrists. I hadn't noticed the chains before. Did they conjure them from thin air? I'm too dazed to fight. The auger who restrained Lyra lifts the girl's body with difficulty and staggers off the dais.
"Aspirant Aquila," Kane says, "you were prepared to strike down the enemy, but you faltered when faced with Veturius, deferring to his wishes. Such loyalty to a peer is admirable, but not in an emperor. Out of all three aspirants, only Aspirant Farrar attempted to carry out my order without question, with unflinching loyalty to the Empire. Thus, I name him victor of the fourth trial."
Helene's face is white as bone. her mind, like mine, unable to take in the travesty occurring in front of our eyes.
Aspirant Aquila, Kane pulls Hell Sim from his robes. Do you remember your vow?
But you can't mean...
I will keep my vows, Aspirant Aquila. Will you keep yours?
She eyes the augur as one would a traitorous lover, taking the sim when he offers it.
I will.
Then kneel now and swear fealty. For we, the augurs, name Marcus Antonius Farrar, Emperor. He who was foretold, High Commander of the Martial Army, Imperator Invictus, Overlord of the Realm. And you, Aspirant Aquila, are named his Bloodshrike, his second in command, and the sword that executes his will. Your allegiance cannot be broken unless by death. Swear it.
No! I roar. Helene, don't do it!
She turns to me, and the look in her eyes is a knife twisting inside me.
You chose Elias, her pale eyes say. You chose her.
Tomorrow, Kane says, after Vittorius's execution, we will crown the foretold.
He looks at the snake.
The Empire is yours, Marcus.
Marcus glances over his shoulder with a smile, and I realize with a jolt that it's something I've seen him do hundreds of times. It's the look he would throw his brother when he'd insulted an enemy, or won a battle, or otherwise wished to gloat. But his smile fades, because Zack's not there. His face goes blank, and he looks down at Helene without conceit or triumph. His utter lack of feeling chills my blood.
Your fealty, Aquila, he says flatly. I'm waiting.
Kane, I say. He's not fit. You know he's not. He's mad. He'll destroy the Empire.
No one hears me. Not Kane, not Helene, not even Marcus. When Helene speaks, she is everything a mask should be. Calm, collected, impassive.
I swear fealty to Marcus Antonius Farrar, she says. Emperor, he who was foretold, High Commander of the Martial Army, Imperator Invictus, Overlord of the Realm. I will be his Bloodshrike, his second in command, the sword that executes his will, until death. I swear it.
Then she bows her head and offers the snake her sword.
Part 3. Body and Soul. Chapter 45. Lyra.
If you wish to live, girl, then let them think you're dead.
Above the sudden din of the crowd, I barely hear the augur's panting whisper, mystified by the fact that a martial holy woman wants, for some reason, to help me. I'm stunned into silence. As her weight crushes me to the dais, the dagger Marcus has flung into her side is jarred loose. Blood seeps across the platform, and I shudder, chillingly reminded of how Nan died. In a pool of blood, just like this one.
Don't move, the augur says, no matter what happens.
I do what she says. Even as Elias shouts my name and tries to pull her off me, the messenger announces the Emperor's assassination. Elias is sentenced to death and chained. Throughout, I remain still. But when the augur named Kane announces the coronation, I stifle a gasp. After the coronation, the death cell prisoners will be executed, which means that unless the resistance gets him out of prison, Darin will die tomorrow. Or will he? Mazin says Darin's in Bekar's death cells. Elias says Bekar doesn't have death cells. I want to scream with frustration. I need clarity. The only one who can give it to me is Mazin, and the only way I'm going to find him is if I get out of here. But I can't exactly stand up and stroll out. Everyone thinks I'm dead. Even if I could leave, Elias just sacrificed his life for mine. I can't abandon him. I lay uselessly, unsure of what to do, when the augur decides for me.
You move now. You die,
she warns, pulling herself off me. When all eyes are on the tableau beside us, she lifts me up and staggers toward the amphitheater door. Dead. Dead. I can practically hear the woman in my head.
Pretend you're dead.
My limbs flop and my head lulls. I keep my eyes closed, but when the augur misses a step and nearly falls, they fly open of their own accord. No one notices, but for a brief moment, as Aquila swears her fealty, I catch a glimpse of Elias's face. And though I've seen my brother taken and my grandparents killed, though I've suffered beatings and scarrings and visited the night shores of death's realm, I know I've never felt the type of desolation and hopelessness I see in Elias's eyes at that moment. The augur rights herself. Two of her fellows close around her, the way brothers flank a little sister in a rough crowd. Her blood soaks my clothes, blending into the black silk. She's lost so much that I don't understand how she can muster the strength to walk.
Augurs cannot die, she says through gritted teeth, but we can bleed.
We reach the amphitheater gates, and once through, the woman sets me on my feet in an alcove. I expect her to explain why she chose to take that dagger for me, but she just limps away, her brethren supporting her. I look back through the amphitheater gates to where Elias kneels, chained. My head tells me I can do nothing for him, that if I try to help him, I'll die. But I can't bring myself to walk away.
You are unhurt.
Cain has slipped away from the still-packed amphitheater, unnoticed by the jabbering crowd.
Good. Follow me.
He catches the look I cast at Elias and shakes his head.
He is beyond your aid right now, Cain says. He has sealed his fate.
So that's it for him. I'm appalled at Cain's callousness. Elias refuses to kill me, and he dies for it. You're going to punish him for showing mercy.
The trials have rules, Cain says. Aspirant Veturius broke them.
Your rules are twisted. Besides, Elias wasn't the only one who violated your instructions. Marcus was supposed to kill me, and he didn't. You still made him emperor.
He thinks he killed you, Cain says, and he revels in the knowledge. That is what matters. Come. You must leave the school. If the commandant knows you survived, your life is forfeit.
I tell myself the augur is right, that I can't do anything for Elias. But I'm uneasy. I've done this before. I've left someone behind and lived to regret it every moment after.
If you do not come with me, your brother will die.
The augur senses my conflict and presses.
Is that what you want?
He heads toward the gates, and after a dreadful few moments of indecision, I turn away from Veturius and follow him. Elias is resourceful. He might still find a way to avoid death. But I won't, Lyra, I hear Darin. Not unless you help me. The legionnaires manning Blackcliff's gates seem not to see us as we pass out of the school. And I wonder if Cain has used augur sorcery on them. Why is he helping me?
What does he want in exchange? If he can read my suspicions, he doesn't let on. Instead, leading me rapidly through the Illustrian Quarter and deep into the sweltering streets of Serra. His route is so convoluted that it seems for a time as if he has no destination in mind. No one looks twice at us, and no one speaks of the Emperor's death or of Marcus's coronation. The news hasn't yet leaked out. The silence between Cain and me stretches until I think it will fall and shatter on the ground. How will I get away from him and find the resistance? I dash the thought from my head, lest the augur pick it out, but then I've already thought it, so it must be too late. I look askance at him. Is he reading all of this? Can he hear every thought?
It's not really mind reading, Cain murmurs, and I wrap my arms around myself and lean away, though I know doing so won't shield my thoughts any better. Thoughts are complex, he explains. Messy. They are tangled as a jungle of vines, layered like the sediment in a canyon. We must weave through the vines, trace the sediment. We must translate and decipher.
Ten hells. What does he know about me? Everything? Nothing?
Where to begin, Lyra? I know your every sinew is turned toward finding and saving your brother. I know your parents were the most powerful leaders the Resistance ever had. I know you're falling for a Resistance fighter named Keenan, but that you don't trust him to love you back. I know you're a Resistance spy.
But if you know I'm a spy...
I know, Cain says. But it matters not.
Ancient sadness flares in his eyes, as if he's remembering someone long dead.
Other thoughts speak more clearly of who you are, what you are, in your deepest heart. In the night, your loneliness crushes you, as if the sky itself has swooped down to smother you in its cold arms.
That's not... But Cain ignores me, his red eyes unfocused, his voice jagged, as if he is speaking his own innermost secrets instead of mine.
You fear you will never have your mother's courage. You fear your cowardice will spell the doom of your brother. You yearn to understand why your parents chose the Resistance over their children. Your heart wants Keenan, and yet your body is alight when Elias Veturius is near. You
stop! It's unbearable, this knowledge of me from someone who isn't me.
You are full, Lyra. Full of life and dark and strength and spirit. You are in our dreams. You will burn, for you are an ember in the ashes. That is your destiny. Being a Resistance spy, that is the smallest part of you. That is nothing.
I scramble for words but find none. It is wrong that he knows so much of me and I know nothing of him in return.
There's nothing to me that is worth anything, Lyra, the augur says. I am an error, a mistake. I am failure and malice, greed and hatred. I am guilty. We are, all of us, augurs guilty.
At my confusion, he sighs. His black eyes meet mine, and his description of himself and his kindred fades from my mind like a dream upon waking.
We are here, he says.
I look around uncertainly. A quiet street stretches in front of me with a row of identical houses on each side. The Mercator Quarter. Or perhaps the Foreign Quarter. I can't tell,
The few people on the streets are too far away to recognize. What are we doing here?
If you wish to save your brother, you need to speak with the Resistance, he says. I have brought you to them.
He nods to the street before me.
Seventh house on the right, in the basement. The doors unlocked.
Why are you helping me? I ask him. What trick?
No trick, liar. I cannot answer your questions, except to say that for now, our interests align. I vow to you by blood and by bone that I do not deceive you in this. Go now, quickly. Time will not wait, and I fear you have little enough as it is.
Despite his calm expression, there's no mistaking the urgency in his voice. It fans my own unease. I nod my thanks, wondering at the strangeness of the last few minutes, and go. As the augur predicted, the back door to the house's basement is unlocked. I take two steps down the stairs before a sim point meets my neck. Lawyer! The sim drops, and Keenan moves into the light. His red hair sticks up at odd angles, and a bandage, wrapped haphazardly around his bicep, is stained with blood. His freckles stand out jarringly against the sick paleness of his skin. How did you find us? You shouldn't be here. It's not safe for you. Quick! He glances over his shoulder, before Mazin sees. Go! I discovered an entrance to Blackcliff. I have to tell him. And there's something else. A spy! No, liar, Keenan says. You can't. Who's there, Keenan? Footsteps clump toward us, and a second later, Mazin sticks his head in the stairwell. Ah, liar. You tracked us down? The older man shoots a look at Keenan, as if he must be responsible for this development. Bring her. The tone of his voice raises the hair on my neck, and I reach through the slit in my skirt pocket for the dagger Elias gave me. Lawyer, listen to me, Keenan whispers as he ushers me down the stairs. No matter what he says, I... Come now, Mazin cuts Keenan off as we enter the basement. I haven't got all day. The basement is small, with crates of goods in one corner and a round table in the center. Two men sit at the table, unsmiling and cold-eyed. Erin and Hyder. I wonder if one of them is the Commandant's spy. Mazin kicks a rickety chair in my direction, the invitation to sit obvious. Keenan stands just behind me, shifting from foot to foot, an animal ill at ease. I try not to look at him. Well now, liar, Mazin says as I take a seat. Any information for us? Other than the fact that the Emperor is dead. How did you...
Because I'm the one who killed him. Tell me, have they named a new Emperor yet?
Yes. Mazin killed the Emperor. I want him to tell me more, but I sense his impatience. They named Marcus. The coronation is tomorrow. Mazin exchanges glances with his men and stands.
Erin, send out the runners. Hyder, get the men ready. Keenan, deal with the girl.
Wait, I stand as they do. I have more. An entrance into Blackcliff. That's the reason I came. So that you can get Darin out. And there's something else you should know. I mean to tell him about the spy, but he doesn't let me.
There's no secret entrance into Blackcliff, liar. Even if there was, I wouldn't be stupid enough to try to attack a school of masks.
And how...
How? He muses. A good question. How do you get rid of a girl who blunders into your hideout at the most inopportune moment, claiming to be the long-lost daughter of the Lioness? How do you appease an essential faction in the Resistance when they stupidly insist you help her save her brother? How do you make it look like you're helping her when in fact you don't have the time or the men to do so?
My mouth goes dry.
I'll tell you how, Mazin says. You give the girl a mission she won't come back from. You send her to Blackcliff, home of her parents' killer. You give her impossible tasks, like spying on the most dangerous woman in the Empire, like learning about the trials before they even occur.
You knew that the Commandant killed...
It's nothing personal, girl. Sunna threatened to pull her men from the Resistance over you. She'd been looking for an excuse, and when you walked in, she had it. But I needed her and her men more than ever. I've spent years building up what the Empire destroyed when they killed your mother. I couldn't let you ruin all of that. I expected that the Commandant would be rid of you in days, if not hours. But you survived. When you brought me information, real information, at the Moon Festival, my men warned me that Sunna and her faction would consider the bargain met. She'd demand your brother be broken out of Central. Only problem was, you just told me the very thing that made it impossible for me to put up the men to do so.
I think back. The Emperor's arrival in Sarah.
When you told me of it, I knew we'd need every last resistance fighter we had if we wanted to assassinate him. A much worthier cause than rescuing your brother, don't you think?
I remember then what the Commandant told me. Those scholar rats know only what I want them to know. What were they up to the last time you met them? Were they planning something significant? Realization strikes me like a blow. The Resistance doesn't even know they've played into the Commandant's hands. Keris Veturia wanted the Emperor dead. The Resistance killed the Emperor and the most important members of his house. Marcus stepped into his place, and now there will be no civil war, no struggle between Jens Tyre and Blackcliff. You fool, I want to scream. You walked right into her trap.
I needed to keep Sunna's faction happy, Mazin says, and I needed to keep you away from them. So I sent you to Blackcliff with an even more impossible task. Find me a secret entrance into the most well-guarded, heavily fortified martial fort outside of Koff Prison. I told Sunna that your brother's escape depended on it, and that giving any more details could imperil the jailbreak. Then I gave her and every other fighter a mission greater than one foolish girl and her brother. A revolution.
He leans forward, his eyes glowing with fervor.
It's only a matter of time before word gets out that Tyus is dead. When it does, chaos, unrest. It's what we've been waiting for. Only wish your mother was here to see it.
Don't you talk about my mother! In my rage, I forget to tell him of the spy. I forget to tell him that the Commandant will know of his grand plan. She lived by Izzat, and you're selling out her children, you bastard! Did you sell her out too? Mazin rounds the table, a vein pulsing in his neck.
I'd have followed the lioness into a fire. I'd have followed her into hell. But you're not like your mother, Lyra. You're more like your father. And your father was weak. As for Izzat, you're a child. You have no idea what it means.
My breathing stutters, and I reach out a shaking hand to the table to steady myself. I look back at Keenan, who refuses to meet my eyes. Traitor. Had he always known that Mazin didn't mean to help? Had he watched and laughed as the foolish little girl went off on impossible missions? Cook was right the whole time. I never should have trusted Mazin. I never should have trusted any of them. Darin knew better. He wanted to change things, but he'd figured out it couldn't be with the rebels. He'd realized they weren't worthy of his trust. My brother, I say to Mazin. He's not in Bekkar, is he? Is he alive? Mazin sighs.
Where the marshals took your brother, no one can follow. Give it up, girl. You can't save him.
Tears threaten to spill down my cheeks, but I fight them back, Just tell me where he is. I tried to keep my voice reasonable. Is he in the city? In Central? You know. Tell me.
Keenan, get rid of her, Mazin commands. Elsewhere, he adds as an afterthought. A body won't go unnoticed in this neighborhood.
I feel as Elias must have felt only a short time ago. Betrayed, desolate. Fear and panic threaten to strangle me. I knot them up and shove them away. Keenan tries to take my arm, but I dodge him, pulling out Elias's dagger. Mazin's men rush forward, but I'm closer than they are, and they aren't fast enough. In an instant, I have the blade at the resistance leader's throat. Back, I say to the fighters. They lower their weapons reluctantly. My pulse pounds in my ears, and I have no fear in this moment, only rage for everything Mazin has put me through. You tell me where my brother is, you lying son of a whore. When Mazin says nothing, I dig the blade in deeper, drawing out a thin line of blood. Tell me, I say, or I'll slit your throat here and now.
I'll tell you, he rasps, for all the good it will do. He's in Kofgirl. They shipped him there the day after the Moon Festival.
Kof, Kof, Kof. I force myself to believe it, to face it. Kof, where my parents and sister were tortured and executed. Kof, where only the foulest criminals are sent to suffer, to rot, to die. It's over, I realize. Nothing I've endured. The whippings, the scarring, the beatings. None of it matters. The resistance will kill me. Darren will die in prison. There's nothing I can do to change it. My knife is still at Mazin's throat. You'll pay for this, I say to him. I swear it to the skies, to the stars. You'll pay.
I very much doubt it, liar.
His eyes dart over my shoulder and I turn. Too late. I catch a flash of red hair and brown eyes before pain bursts in my temple, and I fall into darkness. When I come to, my first feeling is that of relief that I'm not dead. My next is a blunt, consuming rage as Keenan's face swims into focus. Traitor! Deceiver! Liar!
Thank the skies, he says. I thought I'd hit you too hard. No, wait.
I fumble for my knife. Every second I'm conscious, making me more lucid and thus more murderous.
I'm not going to hurt you, liar. Please, listen.
My knife is gone, and I look around wildly. He's going to kill me now. We're in some sort of large shed. Sunlight seeps through the cracks between the warped wooden boards, and there's a jungle of gardening implements leaning against the walls. If I can escape him, I can hide out in the city. The commandant thinks I'm dead, so if I can get the slave's cuffs off, I might be able to leave Sarah. But then what? Do I go back to Blackcliff for Izzy? Lest she be taken by the commandant and tortured? Do I try to help Elias? Do I try to make my way to Kof and break Darren out? The prison's more than 1,000 miles away. I have no idea how to get there, no skills to survive a country swarming with martial patrols. If by some miracle I do make it there, how will I get in? How will I get out? Darren might be dead by then. He might be dead now. He's not dead. If he was dead, I'd know. All this passes through my mind in an instant. I jump to my feet and lunge for a rake. Right now, what matters most is getting away from Keenan.
Lawyer, no! He grabs my arms and forces them to my sides. I'm not going to kill you, he says. I swear it. Just listen.
I stare into his dark eyes, hating myself for how weak and stupid I feel. You knew, Keenan. You knew Mazin never wanted to help me, And you told me my brother was in the death cells. You used me. I didn't know. If you didn't know, then why did you knock me out in that basement? Why did you just stand there while Mazin ordered you to kill me? If I hadn't gone along with it, he'd have murdered you himself. It's the anguish in Keenan's eyes that makes me listen. For once, he's holding nothing back. Mazin locked up everyone he thinks is against him, confining them, he says, for their own good. Sonna's under full guard. I couldn't let him do the same to me, not if I wanted to help you. Did you know Darin had been sent to Koff? None of us knew. Mazin played the whole thing too close. He never let us hear the reports from his spies in the prison. He never gave us details of his plan to get Darin out. He ordered me to tell you your brother was in the death cells. Maybe he was hoping to goad you into taking a risk that would get you killed. Keenan lets me go. I trusted him, Laya. He's led the resistance for a decade. His vision, his dedication, those are the only things that kept us together. Just because he's a good leader doesn't mean he's a good person. He lied to you. And I'm a fool for not seeing it. Sonna suspected he wasn't being truthful. When she realized that you and I were friends, she told me her suspicions. I was sure she was wrong. But then, at that last meeting, Mazin said your brother was in Bekar. And it didn't make any sense because Bekar's a tiny prison. If your brother was there, we'd have bribed someone to get him out ages ago. I don't know why he said it. Maybe he thought I wouldn't notice. Maybe he panicked when he realized you wouldn't just take him at his word. Keenan wipes a tear from my face. I told Sonna what Mazin said about Bekar, but we rode to attack the Emperor that night. She didn't confront Mazin until afterward, and she made me stay out of it. A good thing, too. She thought her faction would get behind her, but they abandoned her when Mazin persuaded them that she was an obstacle to his revolution. The revolution won't work. The Commandant's known from the beginning that I'm a spy. She knew the Resistance was going to attack the Emperor. Someone in the Resistance is reporting to her. Keenan's face goes pale. I knew the attack on the Emperor was too easy. I tried to tell Mazin, but he wouldn't have it. And all the time, the Commandant wanted us to attack. She wanted Tyus out of the way. She'll be ready for Mazin's revolution, Keenan. She'll crush the Resistance. Keenan digs around in his pockets for something. I have to get Sana out. I have to tell her about the spy. If she can get to Tarik and the other leaders in her faction, she might be able to stop them before they walk into a trap. But first, he pulls out a small paper packet and a square of leather and hands them to me. Acid, to break off your cuffs. He explains how I'm to use them, making me repeat the directions twice. No mistakes on this. There's barely enough. It's very hard to find. Lay low tonight. Tomorrow morning at Fourth Bell, get to the river docks. Find a galley called the Bad Cat. Tell them you have a shipment of gems for the jewelers of Silas. Not your name, not my name, nothing else. They'll hide you in the hold. You go upriver to Silas, about a 3-week trip. I'll meet you there, and we'll figure out what to do about Darin. He'll die in Koff, Keenan. He might not even survive the journey there. He'll survive. The marshals know how to keep people alive when it suits them. And prisoners are taken to Koff to suffer, not to die. Most prisoners hold out for a few months. Some hold out for years. Where there is life, Nan used to say, there is hope. My own hope flares, a candle in the dark. Keenan's getting me out. He's saving me from Blackcliff. He'll help me save Darin. My friend Izzy. She's helped me, but the Commandant knows we talk. I have to save her. I swore to myself that I would. I'm sorry, Lawyer. I can get you out,
No one else.
Thank you, I whisper. Please, consider your debt to my father paid.
You think I'm doing this for him? For his memory?
Keenan leans forward, his eyes nearly black with intensity, his face so close that I can feel his breath against my cheek.
Maybe it started that way, but not now. Not anymore. You and I, Lyra, we're the same. For the first time since I can remember, I don't feel alone. Because of you. I can't stop thinking about you. I've tried not to. I've tried to push you out.
Keenan's hand travels ever so slowly up my arm and to my face. His other hand follows the curve of my hip. He pushes my hair back, searching my face as if for something he has lost. And then he is pressing me against the wall, his hand at the small of my back. He kisses me, a hungry kiss, unyielding in its desire, a kiss that has been stored up for days, a kiss that has been stalking me impatiently, waiting to be released. For a moment I stand frozen. Elias's face and the augur's voice swirling in my head.
Your heart wants Keenan, and yet your body is alight when Elias Veturius is near.
I push the words away. I want this. I want Keenan. And he wants me back. I try to lose myself in the feel of his hand tangled with mine, in the silk of his hair between my fingers. But I keep seeing Elias in my mind. And when Keenan pulls away, I can't meet his gaze.
You'll need this. He hands me Elias's dagger. I'll find you in Silas. I'll find a way to Darin. I'll take care of everything. I promise.
I force myself to nod, wondering why the words bother me so. Seconds later, he's out the shed's door, and I'm staring at the packet of acid he gave me. My future, my freedom, all here in a little packet that will break me from these bonds. What had this envelope cost, Keenan? What had passage on the ship cost? And once Mazin realizes he's been betrayed by his former lieutenant, what will that cost Keenan? He only wants to help me, yet I take no comfort in what he said. I'll find you in Silas. I'll find a way to Darin. I'll take care of everything, I promise. Once I'd have wanted that. I'd have wanted someone to tell me what to do, to fix everything. Once, I'd have wanted to be saved. But what has that gotten me? Betrayal? Failure? It's not enough to expect Keenan to have all the answers. Not when I think of Izzy, who even now might be suffering at the Commandant's hands because she chose friendship over self-preservation. Not when I think of Elias, who gave up his own life for mine. The shed is stifling suddenly, hot and close, and I'm across the floor and out the door. A plan forms in my head, tentative, outlandish, and mad enough that it just might work. I wind my way through the city, across Execution Square, past the docks, and down to the weapons quarter, to the forges. I need to find Spiro Tullaman.
Chapter 46. Elias. Hours pass, or maybe days. I have no way to know. Blackcliff's bells don't penetrate the dungeon. I can't even hear the drums. The granite walls of my windowless cell are a foot thick, the iron bars 2 inches wide. There are no guards. There's no need for them. Strange. To have survived the great wastes, to have fought supernatural creatures, to have sunk so low as to kill my own friends, only to die now, in chains, still masked, stripped of my name, branded a traitor. Disgraced, an unwanted bastard, a failure of a grandson, a murderer, a nobody, a man whose life means nothing. Such foolish hope, to have thought that despite being raised to violence, I might one day be free of it. After years of whippings and abuse and blood, I should have known better. I should never have listened to Cain. I should have deserted Blackcliff when I had the chance. Maybe I'd have been lost and hunted, but at least Lyra would be alive. At least Demetrius and Leander and Tristus would be alive. Now it's too late. Lyra's dead. Marcus is emperor. Helene's his bloodshrike. And soon I'll be dead. Lost as a leaf on the wind. The knowledge is a demon gnawing insatiably at my mind. How did this happen? How could Marcus, mad, depraved Marcus, be overlord of the Empire? I see Cain naming him emperor, see Helene kneeling before him, swearing to honor him as her master, and I bang my head against the bars in a futile and painful attempt to get the images out of my mind.
He succeeded where you failed. He showed strength where you showed weakness.
Should I have killed Lyra? I'd be emperor if I had. She died anyway, in the end. I pace my prison cell. 5 steps one way, 6 another. I wish I'd never carried Lyra up the cliffs after my mother marked her. I wish I'd never danced with her, or spoken with her, or seen her. I wish I had never allowed my accursedly single-minded male brain to linger over every detail about her. That is what brought her to the Augur's attention. What made them choose her as the prize for the 3rd trial and the victim for the 4th. She's dead, and it's because I singled her out. So much for keeping my soul. I laugh, and it echoes in the dungeon like shattered glass. What did I think was going to happen? Cain was clear enough. Whoever killed the girl won the trial. I just didn't want to believe that rulership of the Empire could come down to something so brutal.
You're naive, Elias. You're a fool.
Helene's words from a few hours before come back to me.
I couldn't agree more, Hel.
I try to rest, but instead fall into the dream of the killing field. Leander, Ennis, Demetrius, Lyra. Bodies everywhere. Death everywhere. My victim's eyes are open and staring, and the dream is so real I can smell the blood. I think for a long time that I must be dead, that this is some ring of hell I'm walking. Hours or minutes later, I jerk awake. I know immediately that I'm not alone.
Nightmare?
My mother stands outside my cell, and I wonder how long she's been watching me.
I have them too.
Her hand strays to the tattoo at her neck.
Your tattoo?
I've been wanting to ask about those blue whorls for years, and, as I'm going to die anyway, I figure I have nothing to lose. What is it? I don't expect her to answer, but to my surprise, she unbuttons her uniform jacket and pulls up the shirt beneath to reveal a stretch of pallid skin. The markings that I mistook as designs are actually letters that twine around her torso like a coil of nightshade.
Always Victo.
I raise an eyebrow. I wouldn't expect Caris Futuria to wear her house's motto so proudly, especially considering her history with Grandfather. Some of the letters are newer than others. The first A is faded, as if it was inked years ago. The T, meanwhile, looks just days old.
Run out of ink?
I ask her.
Something like that.
I don't ask her anything else about it. She said all she's going to. She stares at me in silence. I wonder what she's thinking. Masks are supposed to be able to read people, to understand them by observing them. I can tell if strangers are nervous or fearful, honest or insincere, just by watching them for a few seconds. But my own mother is a mystery to me, her face as dead and remote as a star. Questions spring free in my mind, questions I thought I no longer cared about. Who is my father? Why did you leave me to die? Why didn't you love me? Too late to ask them now. Too late for the answers to mean anything.
The moment I knew you existed,
her voice is soft,
I hated you.
Despite myself, I look up at her. I know nothing about my conception or birth. Mamie Reeler only told me that if the tribe Saif hadn't found me exposed in the desert, I'd have died. My mother wraps her fingers around the bars of my cell. Her hands are so small.
I tried to get you out of me, she says. I used lifespane and nightswood and a dozen other herbs. Nothing worked. You thrived, eating away at my health. I was sick for months, but I managed to get my commander to send me on a solo mission, hunting tribal rebels. So no one knew, no one suspected. You grew and grew. Got so big I couldn't ride a horse, swing a sword. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything but wait until you were born so I could kill you and be done with it.
She leans her forehead against the bars, but her eyes don't leave mine.
I found a tribal midwife. After I'd attended a few dozen births with her and learned what I needed, I poisoned her. Then one winter morning, I felt the pains. Everything was prepared. A cave, a fire, hot water and towels and cloths. I wasn't afraid. Suffering and blood I knew well. The loneliness was an old friend. The anger, I used it to carry me through. Hours later, when you emerged, I didn't want to touch you.
She releases the bars and paces outside my cell.
I needed to tend to myself, to make sure there was no infection, no danger. I wasn't about to let the son kill me after the father had failed. But some weakness took me, some ancient beast's inclination. I found myself cleaning your face and mouth. I saw that your eyes were open, and they were my eyes. You didn't cry. If you had, it would have been easier. I'd have broken your neck the way I'd break a chicken's neck or a scholar's. Instead, I wrapped you, held you, fed you. I laid you in the crook of my arm and watched as you slept. It was deep night then, the time of night that doesn't feel quite real, the time of night that's like a dream. One dawn later, when I could walk, I got on my horse and carried you to the nearest tribal camp. I watched them for a time and saw a woman I liked. She picked up children like sacks of grain and carried a large stick wherever she went. And though she was young, she didn't seem to have any children of her own. Mamie Reeler. I waited until night and left you in her tent on her bed. Then I rode away. But after a few hours, I turned back. I had to find you and kill you. No one could know of you. You were a mistake, a symbol of my failure. By the time I got back, the caravan was gone. Worse, they'd split up. I was weak and exhausted and had no way to track you. So I let you go. I'd already made one mistake. Why not one more? And then 6 years later, the augurs brought you to Blackcliff. My father ordered me back from the mission I was on. Ah, Elias.
I start. She's never said my name before.
You should have heard the things he said.
Whore, slut, streetwalker. What will our enemies say, our allies?
As it turns out, they said nothing. He made sure of that. When you survived your first year at the school, when he saw his own strength in you, then you were all he could talk about. After years of disappointment, the great Quinn Veturius had an heir he could be proud of. Did you know, son, that I was the best student this school had seen in a generation? The fastest, the strongest. After I left, I caught more resistance scum alone than the rest of my class put together. I brought down the lioness herself. None of that mattered to my father. Not before you were born. Even less so once you arrived. When it came time for him to name an heir, he didn't even consider choosing me. Instead, he named you. A bastard. A mistake. I hated him for it. And you, of course. But more than both of you, I hated myself. For being so weak. For not killing you when I had the chance. I vowed I'd never again make such a mistake. I'd never again show weakness. She comes back to the bars and pins me with her eyes. I know what's in your mind, she says. Remorse. Anger. You go back in your head and imagine yourself killing the scholar girl, the way I imagined killing you. Your regret weighs you down like lead in your blood. If you'd only done it! If only you'd had the strength! One mistake and you've given up your life. Is it not so? Is it not torture? I feel an odd mix of disgust and sympathy for her, as I realize that this is the closest she'll ever come to relating to me. She takes my silence as assent. For the first and probably the only time in my life, I see something a little like sadness in her eyes. It's a hard truth, but there is no going back. Tomorrow you'll die. Nothing can stop it. Not me, not you, not even my indomitable father, though he's tried. Take comfort in knowing that your death will give your mother peace. That the gnawing sense of wrong that has haunted me for 20 years will be set right. I'll be free. For a few seconds, I can't bring myself to say anything. That's it. I'm going to my death, and all she's willing to say is what I already know. That she hates me. That I'm the biggest mistake she ever made. No, that's not true. She's told me that she'd been human once, that she'd had mercy in her. She hadn't exposed me as I'd always been told. When she left me with Mamie Reeler, she tried to give me life. But when that brief mercy faded, when she regretted her humanity in favor of her own desires, she became what she is now. Unfeeling, uncaring, a monster. If I feel regret, I say, it's that I wasn't willing to die sooner. That I wasn't willing to cut my own throat in the third trial instead of killing men I'd known for years. I stand and go toward her. I don't regret not killing Lyra. I'll never regret that. I think of what Cain said to me that night we stood on the watchtower and looked out at the dunes. You'll have a chance at true freedom, of body and of soul. And suddenly, I don't feel bewildered or defeated. This was what Cain spoke of. The freedom to go to my death knowing it's for the right reason. The freedom to call my soul my own. The freedom to salvage some small goodness by refusing to become like my mother. By dying for something that is worth dying for. I don't know what happened to you, I say.
I don't know who my father was, or why you hate him so much. But I know my death won't free you. It won't give you peace. You're not the one killing me. I chose to die. Because I'd rather die than become like you. I'd rather die than live with no mercy, no honor, no soul. I wrapped my hands around the bars and looked down into her eyes. For a second, confusion flashes there, an all too brief crack in her armor. Then her gaze turns to steel. It doesn't matter. All I feel for her in this moment is pity. Tomorrow, I'm the one who will be set free. Not you. I release the bars and move to the back of the cell. Then I slide to the floor and close my eyes. I don't see her face as she leaves. I don't hear her. I don't care. The killing blow is my release. Death is coming for me. Death is nearly here. I am ready for him.
Chapter 47. Liar. I watch Tullamon working from his open door for long minutes before I summon up the courage to enter his shop. He hammers a strip of heated metal with careful, measured strokes, his brightly tattooed arms sweating from the strain. Darin's in cough. He stops, mid-swing, and turns. The alarm in his eyes at my words is strangely comforting. At least there is one other person who cares about my brother's fate as much as I do. He was sent there 10 days ago, I say, just after the Moon Festival. I raise my still cuffed wrists. I have to go after him. I hold my breath as he considers. Tullamon, helping me, is the first step in a plan that depends almost entirely on other people doing what I ask of them. Lock the door, he says. It takes him nearly 3 hours to break the cuffs off, and he says almost nothing the entire time, except to occasionally ask me if I need anything. When I'm free of the cuffs, he offers me a salve for my chafed wrists, and then disappears into the back room. A moment later, he emerges with a beautifully decorated sim, the same blade he used to scare the ghouls away the day I met him. This is the first true Tullamon blade I made with Darin, he says. Take it to him. When you free him, you tell him Spiro Tullamon will be waiting in the Freelands. You tell him we have work to do.
I'm afraid, I whisper. Afraid I'll fail. Afraid he'll die.
The fear flares through me then, as if by speaking of it, I breathe life into it. Shadows gather and pool near the door. Ghouls.
Liar, they say. Liar.
Fear is only your enemy if you allow it to be. Tullamon hands me Darin's blade and nods to the ghouls. I turn and, as Tullamon speaks, advance upon them. Too much fear, and you're paralyzed, he says. The ghouls aren't cowed yet. I raise the sim. Too little fear, and you're arrogant. I strike out at the closest ghoul. It hisses and skitters under the door. Some of its fellows back away, but others lunge at me. I force myself to stand fast, to meet them with the edge of the blade. Moments later, the few that were brave enough to remain flee with wrathful hisses. I turn back to Tullamon. He finds my eyes. Fear can be good, liar. It can keep you alive. But don't let it control you. Don't let it sow doubts within you. When the fear takes over, use the only thing more powerful, more indestructible to fight it. Your spirit. Your heart. The sky is dark when I leave the smithy with Darin's sim hidden beneath my skirt. Marshal squads patrol the streets in force, but I avoid them easily in my black dress, blending into the night like a wraith. As I walk, I remember how Darin tried to defend me from the mask during the raid.
even when the man gave him the chance to run. I imagine Izzy, small and frightened, yet determined to befriend me, though she knew well what the cost could be. I think of Elias, who could have been miles away from Blackcliff by now, free as he always wanted, if he'd only let Aquila kill me. Darin, Izzy, and Elias put me first. No one made them do it. They did it because they felt it was the right thing to do. Because whether they know what Izzat is or not, they live by it. Because they are brave. My turn to do right, a voice says in my head. Not Darin's words anymore, but my own. That voice has always been my own. My turn to live by Izzat. Mazin said I didn't know what Izzat was, but I understand it better than he ever will. By the time I navigate the treacherous hidden trail and scramble up to the commandant's courtyard, the school is still and quiet. The lamps in the commandant's study are lit, and voices drift out her open window, too faint to hear. That suits me fine. Not even the commandant can be in two places at once. The slaves' quarters are dark but for one light. I hear muffled sobbing. Thank the skies. The commandant hasn't taken her for interrogation yet. I peer through the curtain of her room. She isn't alone. Izzy! Cook! They sit on the cot together, Cook with her arm around Izzy. When I speak, their heads jerk up, faces blanching like they've been confronted with a ghost. Cook's eyes are red, her face wet, and when she sees me, she lets out a cry. Izzy throws herself at me, hugging me so tightly I think she'll break a rib. Why, girl? Cook wipes her tears away almost angrily. Why come back? You could have run. Everyone thinks you're dead. There's nothing here for you. But there is something here, I tell Cook and Izzy all that has happened since this morning. I tell them the truth about Spiro Tulliman and Darin and what the two of them were trying to do. I tell them of Mazin's betrayal. Then I tell them my plan. After I finish, they sit silently. Izzy fiddles with her eye patch. Part of me wants to take her by the shoulders and beg her for help. But I can't coerce her into doing this. This has to be her choice. Cook's choice. I don't know, Lyra. Izzy shakes her head. It's dangerous. I know, I say. I'm asking so much of you. If the commandant catches us...
Contrary to what you might think, girl, Cook says, the commandant is not all-powerful. She underestimated you, for one. She misread Spiro Tulliman. He is a man, and so, in her mind, is only capable of a man's base appetites. She hasn't connected you to your parents. She makes mistakes like anyone else. The only difference is that she doesn't make the same mistake twice. Keep that in mind, and you just might be able to outwit her. The old woman considers for a moment. I can get what we need from the school's armory. It's well stocked. She stands up, and when Izzy and I stare at her, she lifts her eyebrows. Well, don't just sit there like lumps on a log. She gives me a kick, and I yelp. Move! Hours later, I awake to Cook's hand on my shoulder. She bends down beside me, her face barely visible in the pre-dawn gloom. Get up, girl! I think of another dawn, the one after my grandparents were killed and Darin was taken. That day, I thought my world was ending. In a way, I was right. Now it's time to remake my world. Time to redo my ending. I put my hand to my armlet. This time, I will not falter. Cook slumps against the entry to my room, sliding a hand across her eyes. She's been up nearly all night, as I have. I didn't want to sleep at all, but in the end, she insisted on it. No rest, no wits, she said when forcing me to my cot just an hour before. And you'll need all your wits if you want to get out of Sarah alive. Hands shaking, I pull on the combat boots and fatigues Izzy Filch from the school supply closets. I buckle Darin's sim to a belt Cook rustled up and pull my skirt over it all. Elias's knife stays attached to the strap on my thigh. My mother's armlet is hidden beneath a loose, long-sleeved tunic. I think at first to wear a scarf to cover the commandant's mark. But in the end, I decide against it. Though I once hated the sight of the scar, I view it with a sort of pride now. As Keenan said, it means I survived her. Beneath the tunic, hanging diagonally across my chest, is a soft leather satchel filled with flatbread, nuts, and fruit sealed in oilskin, along with a canteen of water. Another package holds gauze, herbs, and oils for healing. I shove Elias's cloak on top of it all. Is he? I ask Cook, who watches me silently from the door. Oh, no way. You won't change your mind. You won't come. Her silence is her answer. I look into her blue eyes, distant and familiar all at once. I have so many questions for her. What's her name? What happened with the resistance that was so horrible she can't speak of them without stuttering and convulsing? Why does she hate my mother so much? Who is this woman who is more closed even than the commandant? Unless I ask her now, I will never know the answers. After this, I doubt I'll see her again. Cook, don't. The word, though quietly spoken, is like a door slamming in my face. Are you ready? She asks. The bell tower tolls. In 2 hours, the dawn drums will beat. Doesn't matter if I'm ready, I say. It's time.
Chapter 48. Elias. When the dungeon door rattles, my skin prickles, and I know even before opening my eyes who will escort me to the gallows. Morning, Snake, I greet him. Get up, bastard, Marcus says. It's nearly dawn, and you have an appointment. 4 unfamiliar masks and a squad of legionnaires stand behind him. Marcus looks at me like I'm a roach, but strangely, I don't mind. My sleep was dreamless and deep, and I rise languidly, stretching as I meet the snake's eyes. Chain him, Marcus says. Doesn't the great emperor have more important things to do than escort a mere criminal to the gallows? I ask. The guards clamp an iron collar around my neck and hobble my legs. Shouldn't you be out scaring small children or killing your relatives? Marcus's face darkens, but he doesn't rise to the bait. I wouldn't miss this for anything. His yellow eyes glitter. I'd have raised the axe myself, but the commandant thought it unseemly. Besides, I'd much rather watch my Bloodshrike do it. It takes a moment before I realize that he means for Helene to kill me. He's watching me, waiting for my disgust, but it never comes. The thought of Helene taking my life is strangely comforting. I'd rather die by her hand than an unknown executioner's. She'll make it clean and quick. Still listening to what my old lady tells you, eh? I say. Guess you'll always be her lapdog. Anger flashes across Marcus's face, and I grin. So, the trouble's already begun. Excellent. The commandant is wise, Marcus says. I keep her counsel and will do so as long as it suits me. He drops the formal posturing and leans close, the smugness rolling off him so thickly that I think I'll choke on it. She helped me with the trials from the beginning. Your own mother told me what was coming, and the augurs never even knew. So what you're saying is that you cheated, and you still barely managed to win. I applaud slowly, my chains clanking. Well done.
Marcus seizes my collar and slams my head into the wall. I groan before I can help myself, feeling as if a great chunk of stone has been driven into my skull. The guards unleash a volley of punches to my stomach, and I drop to my knees. But when they back away, satisfied that I've been cowed, I dive forward and take Marcus out at the waist. He's still sputtering when I snatch a dagger from his belt and hold it to his throat. Four Sims whip out of their scabbards, eight bows notch, and all are pointed at me. I'm not going to kill you, I say, nestling the blade into his neck. Just wanted you to know I could. Now take me to my execution, Emperor. I drop the knife. If I'm going to die, it will be because I refused to murder a girl, not because I slit the Emperor's throat. Marcus shoves me away, grinding his teeth in rage.
Get him up, you idiots!
He roars at the guards. I can't help but laugh, and he strides out of my cell, seething. The masks lower their Sims and haul me to my feet.
Free, Elias. You're almost free.
Outside, the stones of Blackcliff are gentled by the dawn, and the cool air warms quickly, promising a scorching day. A wild wind races through the dunes and breaks upon the granite of the school. I might not miss these walls as a dead man, but I will miss the wind and the scents it carries, of faraway places where freedom can be found in life instead of death. Minutes later, we arrive at the bell tower courtyard, where a platform has been erected for my beheading. Blackcliff students dominate the yard, but there are other faces here too. I see Kane beside the Commandant and Governor Tenalius. Behind them, the heads of Sarah's illustrian houses stand shoulder to shoulder with the city's top military brass. Grandfather isn't here, and I wonder if the Commandant's moved against him yet. She will at some point. She spent years coveting rulership of Gens Veturia. I straighten my shoulders and hold my head high. When the axe comes down, I will die the way Grandfather would want me to, proudly, like a Veturius. Always victorious. I turn my attention to the platform, where death awaits me in the form of a polished axe held by my best friend. She glows in her ceremonials, looking more like an empress than a bloodshrike. Marcus breaks off, and the crowd shifts back as he moves to stand beside the Commandant. The four masks march me up the platform stairs. I think I catch a flash of movement beneath the gallows, but before I can look again, I'm on the platform beside Helene. The few people who had been speaking fall silent as Hel turns me to face the crowd.
Look at me,
I whisper, needing suddenly to see her eyes. The augurs made her swear fealty to Marcus. I understand that. It's a consequence of my failure. But now, preparing me for death, she is cold-eyed and hard-handed. Not a single tear. Did we never laugh together as yearlings? Did we never fight our way out of a barbarian camp, or fall into joyful hysterics after successfully robbing our first farmhouse, or carry each other when one of us was too weak to go on alone? Did we never love each other? She ignores me, and I make myself look away from her and into the crowd. Marcus leans toward the governor, listening to something he says. It's strange not to see Zack at his back. I wonder if the new emperor misses his twin. I wonder if he will think rulership is worth the death of the only human who ever understood him. On the other side of the courtyard, Faris stands taller and wider than everyone else, his eyes bewildered as a lost child's. Dex is beside him, and I'm surprised at the streak of wetness that runs down his rigid jaw. My mother, meanwhile, looks more relaxed than I've ever seen her. And why not? She's won.
Beside her, Cain watches me, his cowl thrown back.
Lost, he said, just a few weeks ago, like a leaf in the wind.
And so I am. I won't forgive him for the third trial, but I can thank him for helping me understand what true freedom is. He nods in acknowledgement, reading my thoughts one last time. Helene removes the metal collar.
Kneel,
she says. My mind snaps back to the platform, and I submit to her order. Is this how it ends, Helene? I'm surprised at how civil I sound, as if I'm asking her about a book she's read, but that I have yet to finish. Her eyes flicker, so I know she hears me. She says nothing, just checks the chains on my legs and arms, and then nods to the commandant. My mother reads the charges against me, which I don't pay much attention to, and pronounces the punishment, which I also ignore. Dead is dead, no matter how it happens. Helene steps forward and lifts her axe. It will be one clean sweep, left to right. Air, neck, air. Elias dead. Now it hits me. This is it. This is the end. Martial tradition says a soldier who dies well dances among the stars, battling foes for all eternity. Is that what awaits me? Or will I slip into endless darkness, unbroken and quiet? Uneasiness latches onto me, like it's been waiting around a corner all this time and only now has the gall to emerge. Where do I fix my eyes? On the crowd, the sky. I want comfort. I know I won't find any. I look at Helene again. Who else is there? She's only 2 feet away, her hands loose around the axe handle. Look at me. Don't make me face this alone. As if she's heard my thoughts, her eyes meet mine. That familiar pale blue offering me solace, even as she lifts the axe. I think of the first time I looked into those eyes, as a freezing 6-year-old getting pummeled in the culling pen.
I'll watch your back,
she'd said, with all the gravitas of a cadet.
If you watch mine. We can make it if we stick together.
Does she remember that day? Does she remember all the days since? I'll never know. As I stare into her eyes, she brings the axe down. I hear the whoosh as it cuts through the air and feel the burn of steel biting into my neck.
Chapter 49 Liar. The bell tower courtyard fills up slowly, with groups of younger students arriving first, followed by the cadets, and last, the skulls. They form up in the center of the courtyard, directly in front of the stage, just as Cook said they would. A few of the yearlings stare at the execution platform with a frightened sort of fascination. Most don't look, though. They keep their eyes on the ground or on the black walls looming over them. I wonder, as the illustrious city leaders file in, if the augurs will attend. You best hope not, Cook said, when I'd voiced my worry in this very courtyard last night. They hear you thinking what you're thinking, and you're dead. By the time the dawn drums beat out, the courtyard is full. Legionnaires line the walls, and a few archers patrol Blackcliff's rooftops. But other than that, security is light. The commandant arrives with Aquila after nearly everyone else, and stands at the front of the crowd beside the governor, her face harsh in the grey morning light. By now I shouldn't be surprised at her utter lack of emotion, but I can't help but stare at her from where I crouch beneath the execution dais. Doesn't she care that it's her son who is going to die today? Aquila, standing on the stage, looks calm, almost serene. Strange for a girl holding the axe that's to take off her best friend's head. I watch her through a crack in the wood at her feet. Had she ever cared about Veturius? Had their friendship, which seems so precious to him, ever been real to her? Or had she betrayed him the way Mazin betrayed me? The dawn drums fall silent, and boots march lockstep toward the courtyard, accompanied by the clank of chains. The crowd parts as four unfamiliar masks escort Elias across the yard. Marcus leads them, veering off to stand beside the commandant. I dig my nails into my palm at the satisfaction on his face. You'll get yours, swine. Despite the manacles on his hands and ankles, Elias's shoulders are thrown back, and he holds his head proudly. I can't see his face. Is he frightened? Angry? Does he wish he had killed me? Somehow, I doubt it. The masks leave Elias on the stage and take up positions behind it. I eye them nervously. I didn't expect them to remain so close. One of them looks familiar. Oddly familiar. I look closer, and my stomach seizes. It's the mask who raided my home, who burned it to the ground, the mask who killed my grandparents. I find myself taking a step toward him, reaching for the sim beneath my skirt, before stopping myself. Darin, Izzy, Elias. I have bigger things to worry about than revenge. For the 100th time, I look down at the candles burning behind a screen at my feet. Cook gave me 4, along with tinder and flint. The flame can't go out, she said. If it goes out, you're done. As I wait, I wonder if Izzy has reached the bad cat. Did the acid work on Izzy's cuffs? Did she remember what to say? Did the crew take her on without questions? And what will Keenan say when he goes to Silas and realizes I've given my chance at freedom away to my friend? He'll understand. I know he will. If not, Izzy will explain it to him. I smile. Even if none of the rest of my plan works, this wasn't all for nothing. I got Izzy out. I saved my friend. The commandant reads out the charges against Veturius. I bend down, my hand hovering over the candles. This is it. The timing, Cook said last night, has to be perfect. When the commandant begins reading the charges, watch the clock tower. Don't take your eyes off it, no matter what happens. You have to wait for the signal. When you see it, move. Not a moment sooner, not a moment later. When she gave me the order, it seemed like it would be easy enough to follow. But now the seconds are ticking away. The commandant is droning on, and I'm getting antsy. I stare at the clock tower through a slim crack in the base of the dais, trying not to blink. What if one of the legionnaires catches Cook? What if she doesn't remember the formula? What if she makes a mistake? What if I make a mistake? Then I see it. A flicker of light skittering across the clock face quicker than a hummingbird's wings. I grab a candle and light the fuse at the back of the stage. It catches immediately and begins burning with more fury and sound than I expect. The masks will see. They'll hear. But no one moves. No one looks. And I remember something else Cook said. Don't forget to take cover, unless you want your head blown off. I scurry to the end of the stage, farthest from the fuse, and crouch, covering my neck and head with my arms and hands, waiting. Everything hinges on this. If Cook remembers the formula wrong, if she doesn't get to her fuses on time, if my fuse is discovered or put out, it's all over. There is no backup plan. Above me, the stage creaks, the fuse hisses as it burns. And then, boom! The stage explodes. Chunks of wood and scrap geyser into the air. A deeper boom rumbles and another. The courtyard is suddenly fogged with clouds of dust. The explosions are nowhere and everywhere, ripping through the air like a thousand screams, leaving me momentarily deaf. They have to be harmless, I told Cook a dozen times. Meant to distract and confuse. Strong enough to knock people down, but not strong enough to kill. I don't want anyone dead because of me. Leave it to me, she said. I've no wish to murder children. I peer out from under the stage, but it's difficult to see through the dust. It seems as if the walls of the bell tower have burst out, though in truth, the dust is from more than 200 bags of sand Izzy and I spent all night filling and ferrying to the courtyard. Cook set each one with a charge and connected them together. The result is spectacular. Behind me, the entire back of the stage is gone, the masks beyond it unconscious on the ground, including the one who murdered my family. The legionnaires are in a panic, running, shouting, trying to escape. The students drain out of the courtyard, the older ones half-dragging, half-carrying the yearlings. Deeper booms echo from further away. The mess hall, a few classrooms, all abandoned at this time and likely collapsing at this very moment. A gleeful grin spreads across my face. Cook hasn't forgotten a thing. The drums beat in a frenetic tattoo, and I don't have to understand their strange language to know that it's a breach alarm. Black Cliff is pure havoc, worse than I could have imagined, more than I could have hoped for. It's perfect. I do not doubt. I do not hesitate. I am the lioness's daughter, and I have the lioness's strength. I'm coming for you, Darin, I say to the wind, hoping it will carry my message. You stay alive. I'm coming. And nothing's going to stop me. Then I swing out from my hiding place and hop onto the execution stage. It's time to free Elias Veturius.
Chapter 50 Elias. Is this what happens to everyone when they die? One second you're alive, the next you're dead. And then boom, an explosion that tears apart the very air. A violent welcome to the afterlife. But at least there is one. Screams fill my ears. I open my eyes and find that I'm not, in fact, lying on a fair netherworld plain. Instead, I'm flat on my back beneath the very same platform where I was supposed to have died. Smoke and dust choke the air. I touch my neck, which stings something fierce. My hands come away dark with blood. Does this mean I'll have a severed head in the afterlife? I wonder stupidly. Seems a bit unfair. A pair of familiar gold eyes appears above my face. You're here too? I ask. I thought scholars had a different afterlife.
You're not dead. Not yet, anyway. And neither am I. I'm setting you free. Here, sit up.
She puts her arms under me and helps me up. We're beneath the execution dais. She must have dragged me here. The entire back of the stage is gone, and through the dust I can barely make out the prone forms of four masks. As I take in what I see, I understand, slowly, that I'm still alive. There's been an explosion, multiple explosions. The courtyard is in chaos. Did the resistance attack?
I attacked, Lya says. The augurs tricked everyone into thinking I died yesterday. I'll explain later. What's important is that I'm setting you free. For a price.
What price? I feel steel against my neck and glance down. She is holding the knife I gave her to my throat. She pulls two pins from her hair, keeping them just out of reach.
These pins are yours. You can pick your locks. Use the confusion to get out of here. Leave Blackcliff forever, like you want it. On one condition.
Which is?
You get me out of Blackcliff. You guide me to Koff Prison, and you help me break my brother out of there.
That's three conditions.
I thought your brother was in...
He's not. He's in Koff, and you're the only person I know who's ever been there. You have the skills to help me survive the trip north. That tunnel of yours, no one knows of it. We can use it to escape.
10 burning hells. Of course she won't just set me free for the hell of it. From the mayhem around us, it's clear that she's gone through considerable trouble to pull this off.
Decide, Elias.
The clouds of dust shielding us from view are slowly starting to clear.
There's no time.
It takes me a moment. She offers me freedom, not realizing that even chained, even facing execution, my soul is already free. It was free when I rejected my mother's twisted way of thinking. It was free when I decided that dying for what I believed in was worth it.
True freedom, of body and of soul.
What happened in my prison cell was freedom of my soul. But this is freedom of my body. This is Cain keeping his promise.
Fine, I say. I'll help you.
I don't know how, but that's a minor detail right now.
Hand them over.
I reach for the pins, but she holds them back.
Swear it.
I swear on my blood, bones, honor, and name. I will help you escape Blackcliff. I will help you get to Koff, and I will help you save your brother. Pins, now! Seconds later, my manacles are off. The hobbles around my ankles are next. Behind the stage, the masks stir. Helene still lies face down, but she mutters as she shudders awake. In the courtyard, my mother climbs to her feet, peering through the dust and smoke at the dais. Hag, even when the world explodes around her, her main concern is that I'm dead. Soon enough, she'll have the entire damn school after me.
Come on!
I grab Lya's hand and pull her out from under the stage. She stops, staring at the unmoving form of a mask, one who escorted me to the courtyard. She brings up the dagger I gave her, and her hand shakes.
He killed my grandparents, she says. He burned my home.
I completely sympathize with your desire to stab your family's killer, I say, glancing back toward my mother. But trust me, nothing you could do would begin to compare to the torment he'll face once the Commandant gets her hands on him. He was guarding me. He failed. My mother hates failure. Lya glares at the mask for a second more before giving me a quick nod. As we duck through the arches at the base of the bell tower, I look over my shoulder. My stomach sinks. Helene is staring straight at me. Our eyes lock for a moment. Then I turn and push open the doors to a classroom building. Students rush through the corridors, but they're mostly yearlings, and none of them look twice at us. The structure rumbles ominously.
What the hell did you do to this place?
Set charges in sandbanks all over the courtyard, and there might be some explosives in other places, like the mess hall and the amphitheater and the Commandant's house,
she says, quickly adding,
all empty, didn't want to kill anyone, just create a distraction. Also, I'm sorry I held a knife to you.
She looks embarrassed.
I wanted to make sure you'd say yes.
Don't be sorry. I look around for the clearest exit, but most are flooded with students. You'll be holding a knife to more than one throat before this is all over. You'll need to practice technique, though. I could have disarmed you.
Elias!
It's Dex. Farris stands behind him, open-mouthed, flummoxed at finding me alive, chain-free, and standing hand-in-hand with a scholar girl. For a second, I think I'm going to have to fight them. But then Farris grabs Dex and uses sheer bulk to turn him around and shove him into the crowd, away from me. He looks over his shoulder once. I think I see him smile. Lyra and I burst from the building and skid down a grassy slope.
I make for the doors of a training building, but she pulls me back.
Another way!
Her chest heaves from the running.
That building!
She grabs my arm as the ground beneath us shakes. The building shudders and collapses. Flames explode from its innards, sending plumes of black smoke into the sky. I hope there isn't anyone inside, I say.
Not a soul.
Lyra releases my arm.
Doors were barred ahead of time.
Who's helping you? She can't have done all this alone. That red-haired fellow at the Moon Festival, perhaps. He had the look of a rebel.
Never mind that.
We sprint around the remains of the training building, and Lyra begins to lag. I pull her along mercilessly. We can't slow down now. I don't let myself think about how close I am to freedom, or how close I came to death. I think only about the next step, the next turn, the next move. The Skull's barracks rise ahead of us, and we duck inside. I look back. No sign of Helene. In! I push open the door to my room and lock it behind us. Pull up the center hearthstone, I say to Lyra. The entrance is beneath. I just have to grab a few things. I don't have time for full armor, but I buckle on my chest plate and braces. Then I find a cloak and strap on my knives. My Teleman blades are long gone, abandoned on the dais of the amphitheater yesterday. I feel a pang of loss. The Commandant has probably claimed them by now. From my bureau, I pull out the wooden token given to me by Afia Aranur. It marks a favor owed, and Lyra and I will need all the favors we can get in the days to come. As I pocket it, someone pounds on the door.
Elias!
Helene's voice is pitched low.
I know you're in there. Open up. I'm alone.
I stare at the door. She swore fealty to Marcus. She nearly took my head off minutes ago. And from how quickly she caught up to us, it's clear she came after me like a hound after a fox. Why? Why do I matter so little to her after everything we've been through? Lyra's gotten the hearthstone up. She looks between me and the door.
Don't open it!
She sees my indecision.
You didn't see her before your execution, Elias. She was calm. Like she wanted to do it.
I have to ask her why. I know when I say the words that this will be the life or death of me, what happens now. She's my oldest friend. I have to understand.
Open up!
Helene bangs on the door again.
In the name of the Emperor!
The Emperor? I yank open the door, dagger in hand. You mean the low-born, murdering rapist who's been trying to kill us for weeks?
That's the one,
Helene says. She slips under my arm, her sims still in their sheaths, and hands me, to my astonishment, the Teleman blades.
You know, you sound just like your grandfather. Even when I was smuggling him out of the damn city, all he could talk about was the fact that Marcus was a plebeian.
She smuggled Grandfather out of the city. Where is he now? How did you get these? I hold up the sims.
Someone left them in my room last night. An augur, I assume. As for your grandfather, he's safe. Probably making some innkeeper's life hell even as we speak. He wanted to lead an attack on Blackcliff to set you free, but I convinced him to lay low for a while. He's clever enough to keep a rein on Jens Veturia, even while in hiding. Forget about him and listen. I need to explain.
At that moment, Lyra clears her throat pointedly, and Helene draws her sim.
I thought she was dead.
Lyra grips her dagger tightly.
She is alive and well, thanks. She set him free, which is more than I can say for you. Elias, we need to leave.
We're escaping. I hold Helene's eyes. Together.
You have a few minutes, Helene says. I sent the legionnaires the other way.
Come with us, I say. Break your oath. We'll escape Marcus together. Lyra lets out a sound of protest. This isn't part of her plan. I continue on regardless. We can figure out how to bring him down together.
I want to, Hel says. You don't know how much. But I can't. It's not the oath to Marcus that's the problem. I made another vow. A different vow. One I can't break.
Hel, listen to me. Right after graduation, Cain came to me. He told me death was coming for you, Elias, but that I could stop it. I could make sure you lived. All I had to do was swear fealty to whoever won the trial, and hold to that fealty no matter what the cost. That meant that if you won, I'd swear myself to you. If not, what if you'd won? He knew I wouldn't win. Said it wasn't my fate. And Zack was never strong enough to stand up to his brother. It was always between you and Marcus. She shudders. I've dreamt of Marcus, Elias, for months now. You think I just hate him, but I'm afraid of him. Afraid of what he'll make me do, now that I can never say no to him. Afraid of what he'll do to the Empire, the scholars, the tribes. It's why I tried to get Elias to kill you in the trial of loyalty.
Hel looks at Lyra.
Why I nearly killed you myself. You'd have been one life against the darkness of Marcus's reign.
All Helene's actions of the past few weeks suddenly make sense. She's been desperate for me to win because she knew what would happen if I didn't. Marcus would rise and release his madness on the world, and she would become his slave. I think of the trial of courage.
Can't die, she'd said. Have to live.
So she could save me.
I think of the night before the trial of strength.
You have no idea what I've given up for you, the deal I made.
Why, Helene? Why didn't you tell me?
You think the augurs would have let me? Besides, I know you, Elias. You wouldn't have killed her, even if you'd known.
You shouldn't have taken that vow,
I whisper.
I'm not worth that much. Cain kept his vow. He said if I swore fealty and held it, you'd live. Marcus ordered me to swear my loyalty. So I did. He ordered me to swing that axe at your head. So I did. And here you are, still alive.
I touched the wound at my neck. A few inches more, and I'd have been dead. She'd trusted the augurs with everything. Her life, my life. But then, that's who Helene is. Her faith is steadfast. Her loyalty, her strength.
They always underestimate me.
I'd underestimated her more than anyone. Cain and the other augurs saw it all. When he told me I had a chance at freedom of body and soul, he knew he'd force me to pick between keeping my soul and losing it. He saw what I would do, that Lyra would free me, that we'd escape. And he knew that in the end, Helene would swear fealty to Marcus. The vastness of that knowledge staggers me. For the first time, I catch a tiny glimpse of the burden the augurs must live with. There is no time to wonder at such things now. The barracks doors creak open, and somebody barks orders. Legionnaires tasked with sweeping the school.
After I escape, I say, break the oath then.
No, Elias. Cain kept his promise. I'll keep mine. Elias,
Lyra warns softly.
You forgot something.
Helene lifts her hands and pulls at my mask. It clings tenaciously, as if it knows that once it's off, it will never get a chance at me again. Slowly, Hel rips it free, rending the flesh of my neck as the metal releases. Blood pours down my back. I hardly notice it.
Footsteps echo in the hall. A mailed hand clanks against the door. I have so much left to say to her.
Go!
She shoves me toward Lyra.
I'll cover you this last time. But after this, I belong to him. Remember, Elias, after this, we're enemies.
Marcus will send her after me. Perhaps not right away. Perhaps not until she's proven herself. But eventually, he will. We both know it. Lyra ducks into the tunnel, and I follow. When Helene reaches for the hearthstone to pull it over me, I grab her arm. I want to thank her, apologize to her, beg her forgiveness. I want to drag her down here with me.
Let me go, Elias.
She puts soft fingers to my face and smiles a sad, sweet smile that's mine alone.
Let me go.
Don't forget this, Helene, I say. Don't forget us. Don't become like him. She nods once, and I pray that her nod is a promise. Then she takes hold of the stone and pulls the hearth closed. Ahead of me, Lyra inches forward, her hand outstretched as she feels her way through the dark. Seconds later, she drops from my tunnel into the catacombs with a startled yelp. For now, Helene can cover for us. But when order is restored at Blackcliff, Sarah's ports will shut down. The legionnaires will bar the city gates, and the streets and tunnels will be flooded with soldiers. The drums will beat from here to Antium, alerting every guardhouse and garrison that I've escaped. Rewards will be offered. Hunting parties will form. Ships, wagons, caravans will all be searched. I know Marcus, and I know my mother. Neither will stop until they have my head.
Elias?
Lyra doesn't sound afraid, just wary. The catacombs are tomb black, but I know where we are. In a burial chamber that hasn't been patrolled in years. Ahead of us are three entrances, two that are blocked and one that just looks blocked. I'm with you, Lyra. I reach out and take her hand. She squeezes it. I take a step, Lyra close beside me. Then another. My mind ranges out, planning our next moves. Escape Sarah. Survive the road north. Break into Koth. Save Lyra's brother. There will be so much more in between. So much uncertainty. I don't know if we'll survive the catacombs, let alone the rest of it. But it doesn't matter. For now, these steps are enough. These first few precious steps into darkness. Into the unknown. Into freedom.
This is Steve West. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of An Ember in the Ashes by Sabah Tahir. This program was directed by Kathy Thornburn. Executive Producer, Diane McKiernan. Text Copyright 2015 by Sabah Tahir. Production Copyright 2015, Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.